I cut.
You cut that short?
That's right.
Oh, you're such a tease.
Yeah, I am.
I didn't know that song had that much intro.
Yes, it does.
I never heard all that.
That's kind of what I like about it.
Tinkly wind chime
action. The tinkly wind chime stuff is kind of what I'm into.
All right.
I mean, I like the disco part, too.
Yeah. But you're a new age kind of fella.
ELO is what that is.
Yes. This is Loyola.
I am a new age person. Some call me a guru of the new age movement.
Who?
Name
one person who calls you a guru of the new age movement.
Well, my pal Deepak, he always says, you know, he just is one that got the breaks.
Right. And will you turn up my headphones a little like
I'm just as in touch with the larger cosmic order.
With your freaky chakras?
Yeah.
That's nice.
And it's, I mean, he made all the money.
Mm-hmm. But you're keeping it real.
I've got lots of internal peace and calm.
That's nifty.
I think you are aware of that about me. Super chill.
Sure. I feel like we're not. Our levels aren't where they ought to be.
What's wrong?
I don't know.
Turn it off. Play it back. Start it over.
No, I mean, it's not terrible. It's just, it's...
Well,
it's,
but we'll be upset if we did it all wrong after 90 minutes or what, 60 minutes? Well, all right,
let's pause and listen to what we got and see if this is working or not. Hang on. Okay, no, it's actually working. So, yes. All right.
Our sound quality is great. Thumbs up, number one.
There we go. So this is a podcast about movies.
Eventually.
At some point, we get there. The road towards movies is winding, but it bends towards our talking about them.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I'm Alonzo Duraldi from therap.com and What the Flick, and joining me on the sixes and sevens is Dave White of movies.com. I don't even know what sixes and sevens are. Are they like the wheels of steel?
The ones and the twos, yes.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, welcome to Linoleum Knife.
I'm Dave White.
Yes.
You did say that part.
I did.
All right.
And it's insanely hot in this apartment.
It's 200 degrees.
Yeah, we're dying here.
And I didn't even want to do this today.
Really?
I'm a reluctant podcaster today.
The thought of just putting on headphones felt painful. Yeah.
For an hour. Like, you're lucky. I know I said 90 minutes, like, some of you really like it when we go very long, and others, I suppose, turn us off after a certain amount of time, but...
There are people with desk jobs out there, or just want treadmill time. Yeah, they need entertainment.
And so, but I'm not keeping these on for more than 60 minutes, because I can feel it already making my skull sweat.
The hot air pockets around your ear?
Yeah.
Well, all right. We'll try not to keep it too long.
And really, the only thing that is legitimately hot-brained on this podcast is White House Down.
Right. Which, but before we get to that, we need to talk about the fact that you and I are now a federally recognized married couple.
That's pretty great. I'm happy about that.
Now I can kill you for your Social Security.
You could do that if you'd like. I would like it if you didn't.
I won't.
Although...
But I could.
Now that you bring this up, I want the record to show that when the day comes that you have advanced Alzheimer's, like Julie Christie in the movie Away From Her.
Yes.
If you suddenly die, it is not because of me.
It better be.
No.
It's your responsibility.
I want it. Yeah, well, this is the thing. I don't know if we've talked about this on the show or not before, but the day we went to see that movie, which, by the way, is a terrific movie.
Absolutely. Sarah Pauly's directorial debut.
On the way home, you said to me, if that ever happens to me, if I ever get to the point where I can't verbally communicate or know things about the world around me, I want you to murder me. You didn't say... You didn't say...
Aid me with my...
You didn't say, you know, assist me in self-termination.
Help me cross over.
Yeah. You said, I want you to murder me.
Well, you never know if you understand. Ideally, I thought I had to cut to the chase.
You have to speak it in my language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ideally, you would think that that is a way that you could convince me to do it.
Yeah, I thought that would be appealing.
But you underestimated my special feelings as a spouse.
Mm.
A thing I could never do. I would sooner let you suffer.
That's not helping.
And waste away.
No, no, no. Look, there are any number of physicians to whom you are now legally, officially in-law to.
Here's the great thing about this week, really. The biggest thing that I thought about on Wednesday was, wow, now the Duraldes are my actual in-laws.
Well, they've been your actual in-laws for some
time.
They've
been my spiritual in-laws all this time, and they've been like, in practice, they have behaved as
I don't know what laws actually come into play with in-laws, really.
It's I'm lawfully wed to you now.
Well, there is that.
So they are lawfully my family.
Anyway, so there's
so
there are any number of Duraldes with MD after their name.
I understand that,
and they will hook you up.
Yes, I know. You've got there's like 8 doctors in the Duraldi family. That's not a number I just made up either. That's an actual. That's the actual number of doctors in this family. It's very weird, and
I am not one of them.
But no, you're not. The as evidenced by the fact that
we're in an air-conditioned apartment.
We live in an apartment with no central air.
We're starving in a garret.
That was the thing about this Wednesday is I thought, well, these are my real in-laws now. I mean, they've behaved as my in-laws this entire 18-year stretch of time, and they are awesome. On every level. But, you know, there's always that moment where you're like, well, we're still all just strangers to one another here.
In a legal sense,
In a legal sense, you know. And so I'm really, you know, very excited about that. I'm very happy that I'm really like an in-law now.
Mm.
It's great.
Yeah.
And you have my family as in-laws now.
Who are always very nice to me.
Yes, they certainly are.
I got no beef with the whites.
And the now we're married all the way. We've gone all the way
with marriage. Taking it all the way. Joint tax returns coming soon.
Our marriage was not reinstated, as people keep asking us.
Yes, because it was never taken away.
There's a lot of confusion going on.
Right.
Like, there. You know,
let me walk people through it. Okay. In 2008, the California Supreme Court decided that it was unconstitutional to deprive same-sex couples the right to marry in the state of California. When that decision came down, we knew they were going to go after it in no time. So within the week, very weekend, Dave and I got married for real, officially, paperwork, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Then that fall, Prop 8 was passed by California voters, which took away the ability of same-sex couples to get married in the state of California. However, the 1,000-plus couples who had gotten married...
18,000.
Oh, sorry, yeah, not 1,000-plus, what am I saying? The 18,000-plus couples who had gotten married during that window between the Supreme Court decision and the passage of Prop 8 were not demarried. We were married legally. They couldn't take it away from us. We have always remained.
It was a strange sort of limbo to be in.
Yeah, we could be married in California, but nobody else could get married in California. That was a dude or lady couple.
Yeah.
Now, thanks to SCOTUS deciding that the pro Prop 8 horrible people did not have the standing to take the case to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
It has been thrown out, and the Ninth Circuit Court ruling saying that Prop 8 is unconstitutional stands, and so now folks are getting married in California again.
Yeehaw!
But we have not changed in status.
Correct. The only status that we have now acquired is the federal.
Right. Thanks to the other big SCOTUS decision this week of overturning DOMA, we are now federally recognized as a couple, which means we have access to each other's Social Security. We can file joint tax returns.
So many exciting things.
Yes. Well, I mean, not tons for us because we don't have any money anyway. But our friends who are binational, where one is an American citizen and the other one is a citizen of another country, they can now get married, and the non-U.S. citizen can get a green card.
Yeah.
So, woohoo! Big week.
It's very nice.
Yes. I mean, it sucks that they gutted the Voting Rights Act, but you know, you can't have everything.
There is. Well, no, we should have everything. No, absolutely. We should have everything right.
And hopefully, I'm hoping Congress takes the steps to reinstate.
It's sort of like a weird reversal in a way. Like, you know, 2008, you're all excited because Obama got elected. And then on the same day, you got your marriage, you know, half annulled.
Right.
And now your marriage is back, but now the Voting Rights Act has been gutted.
Yeah, it's
and
weird.
And so it's like you could, oh, here's a step forward. Well, here's another step back.
Right, yeah. Heaven forbid we get both
jerks
in our favor.
Jerks still keep trying to run things wrongly.
Yes.
And
C's are still running the world.
Yes, big letter C's are running the world still. But let's do this right away. Let's, like, I want to start talking about the movies.
Okay.
Because I want to get these headphones off my head.
Okay, fine. White House Down, you were mentioning.
Yes, Hot Brain.
Explain what you mean by Hot Brain.
On the fritz. Something that needs a little cool down time. Something that needs a little redirection because it's haywire.
Your brain or the movie?
The movie.
Ah, okay.
This is a fever pitch of dumb.
Very much so.
Yeah.
But in the best way, I thought.
Almost in the best way. I still have a few misgivings, and I should probably get over them because it's not going to go away, about the weird exploitation of 9/11.
I didn't feel that as much in this one as I did in White House Down.
It is all that. Hmm. All of that stuff.
They don't fly a plane into the Washington Monument the way they did in Olympus Has Fallen.
They just destroy, just blow one up. Hmm. You know? And so, it's films like this, and I'm not talking about the movies that are literally about 9/11.
Right.
You know, like Remember Me, which I mentioned in my review.
Yeah, or United 93.
You get a movie like Remember Me, and it's directly about 9/11 in the grossest way possible. You know, or you see a movie like World Trade Center.
Sure.
And it's this, you know, really moving film about the one person who lived, you know. And that's strange, too, you know. But then you get movies that are just influenced by and received. Well, everything they have has been received from,
like Man of Steel.
Yeah, or this, or
Star Trek Into Darkness,
Avengers. You know, yeah. But all the way back to Spike Lee's Inside Man.
Sure. Yeah,
these are all films that are informed by, and directly influenced by, and wouldn't exist the way they exist without.
Well, that's the thing. I think you need to distinguish what a post 9/11 action movie versus a pre 9/11 action movie was, because when I brought this up in the past on What the Flick, people said, "Oh, what? So you can't, you know, buildings can't blow up now, or planes can't crash, or, you know, without it being a 9/11 movie."
If your film contains terrorists doing terrorist things that are very much like 9/11, and if the film visually exploits or mimics imagery that was made so, like, indelible in public then,
mm-hmm,
you are a post 9/11 film, and you have been influenced, and you have appropriated that stuff.
It didn't register with me as strongly in this one, and maybe because I was just so, because
it's so dumb.
I was so distracted by how daffy.
Because
it
there's
is.
Comedy in it.
Yeah, because it's so loopy. I guess I didn't. Maybe I didn't take it in the way that I did with Man of Steel, where you've literally got people covered in rubble, you know, staggering down city streets.
Right. I have. You know, it varies from film to film. I'm not saying they all.
Sure.
You know, no, I'm not saying everything
is equal.
Is equal, or, you know, quantitatively the same.
Right.
I'm just saying that these movies wouldn't be these movies the way they are if it weren't for that.
I guess.
So here's the thing. It's, you know, this movie starts off stupid and gets stupid.
Yeah.
And then gets stupid.
Yeah.
until the end when a little kid saves everybody or something. In the middle of it all, you've got the most progressive version of Barack Obama, Florak Flo Flama,
played by Jimmy Fox.
And his vice president, played by Michael Murphy, Flo Flyden. They're kidnapped. They are, you know, taken into various
safe
places. Yeah. And Channing Tatum, who wants to be a Secret Service guy, but who just can't seal the deal, can't get it together, can't get places on time, can't close. He can't even make the squirrel stop attacking the bird house.
This is
the opening of the movie. The squirrel, Channing Tatum is talking to a squirrel. He's talking to a squirrel, and he's saying, "Hey, you stop attacking that bird feeder house." And the squirrel's like, "Whatever, dude. I'm going to do what I do." And Channing Tatum's like, "Oh, I'm no good at anything. Guess I better go interview for the Secret Service."
And he drops the ball as a single dad, too.
Right, yeah, he's a bad single dad. I mean, he loves his daughter, but he missed the recital. So when is he going to commit? When is he going to...
see something through.
When is he going to see something through? When is he going to, you know, make something happen that's good for somebody? And then the terrorists come. And the terrorists are led by James Woods, who, in the very opening moments of the film, is seen saying goodbye to his wife in the morning solemnly. And he says, "I love you. I really love you." And then he solemnly takes off his American flag lapel pin.
Yes.
He's a government official.
Right.
And
that's when you know it's going to go
down.
That's
when you know. And his face has, he's got this kind of concerned face, but then it just sort of changes, you know, slightly to kill everyone face.
Which is the James Woods default, I think.
Yeah. And so he goes off to be the bad terrorist leader of the Jason Clark and all the other guys.
That guy from Debs.
Yeah. Who are a ragtag bunch of miscreants and misfits.
White supremacists and hackers
and disgruntled and soldiers and hackers and
bikers.
Tea party stuff.
Lunatics.
You know, yeah. And so they all got super mads about Florak Flo Flama and his lecturing the G8 about poverty.
And bringing about all peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, he's removing all the troops from the Middle East, and he's working actively to bring peace to the Middle East, and that's going to upset the military-industrial complex, and it's going to upset all the right-wing lunatics. So the right-wing lunatics are gunning for him, and they gun a lot. They blow everything up, and they crash them. They turn a plane into a bomb, and they do all manner of terrible...
Little do they know that Channing Tatum and his daughter are touring the White House.
Yes, they do. And they are a crack team of people who are going to get the job done.
Yeah.
The daughter is texting...
He's a veteran.
...video to the news.
Yeah, the daughter's got a vlog, and she's a super...
It's not a vlog. It's a YouTube channel.
Sorry. And she's, you know, she's got like, she's a super policy wonk kid, like knows...
That's actually a joke in the movie, too,
yes,
by the way.
Knows all the things about the White House and stuff.
She's the kid in the Poseidon Adventure who knows where everything is.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. She's Eric Shea. But she's actually Joey King, who was in Ramona and Beezus and Oz and is about to be in The Conjuring. I had the best time at this movie. I was sitting with
Matt Atchett.
With friend of the show Gray Drake, friend of the show Bibbs, and friend of the show Whitney. We all sat together and just giggled and clapped our chubby little hands and like went and just had a great time.
I had a great time too.
And by the time
I especially had a great time.
And when the closing song comes on, I was just like, okay, I am done, movie. You own me. I can't fight back anymore.
My favorite thing about this movie, or I had a couple favorite things about this movie. The car chase around the grounds of the White House.
Right, where they can't get out.
They're in a circle with the terrorists are chasing them. They're basically driving around a fountain.
Yes.
And they...
Because they've locked all the gates and they can't...
And they're
trying to get off the ground.
Shooting at each other. And it should have had Yakety Sax. the president has a rocket launcher.
Yes.
He's like, I'm going to kill all of y'all. And my other favorite thing was Ben Mankiewicz.
Yes. Who we must discuss.
First of all, he never told me he was going to be in this movie.
I knew this was happening.
I was just completely, I'm sitting there.
Did I not tell you?
You didn't tell me.
You were completely taken by surprise. That's
totally
hilarious.
Taken by surprise. I don't know that Matt knew either.
Oh, that's so funny.
So it happens, like his shot comes up, and both Matt and I are like, what's going on? What's he doing in this movie? For those of you who don't know who we're talking about, Ben Mankiewicz is a colleague of Alonzo's on What the Flick.
Yes.
He's on the Young Turks Network during the
day. He does other Young Turks stuff, yeah.
And he's one of the hosts of Turner Classic Movies.
Correct.
And so Bill Hader does an impersonation of him on Saturday Night Live.
Okay. And his granddad wrote a little movie called Citizen Kane.
Correct. Anyway, okay, so... So every 20 minutes or so in this movie, they cut to Ben as a news anchor explaining the plot. And so my favorite bit is when they cut to him and he goes, there's an entire group of schoolgirls still inside.
But he sells it.
Yes, he does. As entertaining as that was, like, I was super excited and happy every time he popped up on screen. I was like, ah, there he is, saying something dumb. And as much as I enjoyed that,
mm-hmm.
I have a problem, personally. And this is, I understand, an incredibly rarefied problem.
Oh, boy. When you see somebody you know in a movie, it
when
takes you out of it?
When a friend of mine is in a movie, it takes me completely out.
You need to work on that.
I don't have a lot of friends.
I know, but
who
still
wind up in movies. But
we have, like, friends who could get more successful. You never know.
I know that's true. Like, I know that every time Korean superstar Chil Kong is in a film,
mm-hmm.
I go, "What's up, Chil?" And then I forget what I'm watching.
What about Kim Dickens?
Here's the thing about Kim. I knew she was already an actress working in films before I met her. She's
okay.
Your old friend from back in the day.
Yeah.
But by the time I met her, she was already in movies.
So if you see them in a movie first and then meet them, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, basically. Because then I'm sort of like, oh yeah, I know that person. I mean, if I see a movie and there's someone I know in it, like Kim,
mm-hmm.
Like what was she just in?
At Any Price.
That was that bad movie with the farm, right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. When I see a movie like that... and she was the mom in Footloose.
Yes.
Also, okay. That doesn't super take me out. Because I go, I walk in knowing, all right, Kim, our friend, is in this movie. But like when I don't know what's happening, like if a friend is in a small role and they just didn't bother to tell anybody, because the thing about being in a tiny role in a film,
mm-hmm.
you could get cut.
Right.
And you would never... And here you go for 6 months telling my friends, I'm going to be in this movie. And
I'm going to be in the new Terrence Malick movie. I'm the lead. And then, what? I'm cut?
Yeah. And then when your scene is completely cut, you're like, well, I was there. I was there.
So are you saying that because of Babalu's brief appearance in The Ugly, or The Awful Truth,
yes.
that's what ruined that movie for you?
One of the many things.
That movie was well past ruination by the time he showed up.
Him mugging for the camera. Paging Mr. Herman. I hope he's listening. And then the rest of the film. So every single time that Ben would talk, I'd be like, Ben Mankiewicz, ladies and gentlemen, explains it all for you.
I was crazily entertained. Like, I was almost as entertained by White House Down as I was by Fast and Furious 6. I had a blast.
Fast and Furious 6 is way, 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 way better.
No, I agree. I'm not arguing that. I'm just talking about it in terms of just the fun that I had. I mean, Roland Emmerich is a hack, but he's a very specific kind of hack.
Fast and Furious 6 has elephantitis of the nuts
yes.
compared to this movie.
Roland Emmerich has...
And I mean that in a really good way.
I know you do.
Yeah.
Roland Emmerich has a very specific kind of movie that he knows how to make really fun. I mean, they're dopey and mostly forgettable, but you know, while you were watching 2012, while you're watching The Day After Tomorrow, they're really entertaining.
You're having a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I understand. I've never
gone back and rewatched any of them, Independence Day even.
No.
But while they were unfolding, I was having a blast, and I had a blast at White House Down.
Yes. It's stupid.
It's so stupid.
But
stupid entertaining.
But I'm kind of getting behind it.
Yeah.
No one else is, though, apparently.
No.
It's completely tanking.
Yeah, which is a pity, because it's...
Whatever.
It's just it's the, enormously dumb fun.
It's the idiot cousin, identical cousin, to Olympus Has Fallen.
Well, I would say, I think this is better than Olympus Has Fallen.
I am pro Olympus Has Fallen on one level.
Melissa Leo being dragged by the hair?
That.
And saying the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes. Also, that it's rated R and super violent.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
But I would say as... not even just comparing it to Olympus Has Fallen, as diehard ripoffs go, this is one of the best ones I've seen. I'd have to go back to like
Die Hard 2.
Well, Die Hard 2, but even like Under Siege, I think, you know,
right.
It's pretty good.
Right.
But yeah, I had a great time.
Yeah, it is a not good movie that is lots of good fun.
Yeah, see it with the right people, see it at a drive-in,
or a little drunk.
Yeah. A little tipsy maybe, or just with the right kind of people that you can giggle with the way I did. And
yeah,
it was great
yeah.
for that. Okay. The Heat was a legitimately smart, funny, entertaining movie. Also has its dumbness, I suppose, but it is crude and...
First one was a... Well, actually, you know what? We don't have to explain the plot of The Heat.
No.
We don't. And the reason we don't have to explain the plot of The Heat... is because you've seen this movie before many, many, many times.
It was maybe called 48 Hours at the time, or Freebie and the Bean, or Lethal Weapon, or you name it. It's a mismatched buddy cop movie. Woo!
They don't want to work together. They have to work together.
Yeah. They hate each other. They learn to like each other.
And we're just tinkling lots of ice today.
Because it's hot in here.
It's Playboy After Dark. Happening up in here right now.
Jan Murray will be stopping by for a gimlet.
The gold diggers are coming over now.
We got to stay hydrated. It's.
Mm-hmm. But so here's all right. Here are all the problems with The Heat.
Okay, it's ugly.
It ain't good looking, even though it was shot by this great cinematographer and apparently intentionally meant to look.
Like a cop, something. I'm not sure what they were going for.
I need to go think about that a whole lot.
Yeah.
It looks bad in the way, you know, when I say bad, I simply mean not cinematic.
It's muddy.
It looks like a TV show.
Mm.
And it is plotted like a TV show or any other, mismatched buddy cop films. It is absolutely unoriginal on many, many levels. There's nothing memorable about the story. There's nothing memorable about the script. There's nothing memorable about pretty much everyone in the film.
Right, but all that stuff is there.
Except.
Yeah.
It's two leads.
Right, but all that stuff is just there to be the framework on which to hang the jokes.
Yes.
And I'm okay with that.
Well, you know, you have to be okay with that. Because
that's
all you're
going to
get.
But no one's going to this movie for the cop plot.
On one level, I believe that we should have been able to do that. I believe in there needing to be a real story taking place. Something bold, something fresh, something at least interestingly derived from that template.
Hmm.
This is not that movie.
No. Although, I mean, go ahead.
So that is a disappointment. And I understand people not liking the film for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Having said all that, I laughed my head off. Because I love Melissa McCarthy.
Yes.
And I'm a huge Sandra Bullock fan, too.
You are. You are indeed.
I believe that given the right moment, she can be very funny.
No, no, absolutely. And this is one of those
moments. This is one of those. She really wisely kind of stands behind Melissa McCarthy.
Right.
She's the straight-laced character to begin with, so she's going to be the straight man through most of the
right.
the stuff. But she knows...
Not to get in the way.
Not to get in the way of the Tasmanian devil. Because that's really what Melissa McCarthy does here.
Right.
She just spins out of control. And is so great at that. And is so great at that kind of like fast improvising. Mm-hmm. Where you know that most of the stuff she says was never in the script.
Right. She's operating without a net pretty much.
She just does it.
I mean, what I was reminded of was, and this is not a movie that I am a big fan of, but a lot of people were, is Beverly Hills Cop. That was a movie that was written originally for Sylvester Stallone.
Really?
Yeah, and it would have just been sort of a standard issue, fish out of water cop movie.
Right.
When it became an Eddie Murphy vehicle,
yes.
obviously, it became a very different thing entirely.
Yeah.
And that's got a terrible plot. I mean, right. it's the worst. But again...
But that's a really funny movie.
But it's a really funny movie for people who are fans of Eddie Murphy. And this is a really funny movie for people who are fans of Melissa McCarthy and, to some extent, Sandra Bullock.
I know that there are people out there who already dislike Melissa McCarthy.
I do not understand them.
Because of their whatever. Big lady, big obnoxious lady... I don't know. Hmm. Lady. Honestly, I really think a lot of it comes down to that. Although it made a gang of money this weekend.
Yeah.
So apparently people, you know,
She does have fans. But I mean, by God, Identity Thief made money. Yeah. Thankfully, this made more money because that movie was garbage.
Yeah. She, I found it interesting that readers responded... I don't know how they responded on movies.com, but some of them came to me directly at Facebook and said, I don't know what you liked about that movie. It was garbage about the heat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, did you actually read what I wrote? Because I wrote about the problems, and then I wrote about why Melissa McCarthy was so great. I didn't, you know, I don't get engaged, mm-hmm. you know, with this. But comedy is a tough call. It's very subjective and it's very personal. And so, you know, there are people who don't think the show Girls is funny. I think it's really funny.
Right.
There are people who don't think Louie is funny. I think Louie's really funny. There are people who think, you know, Two and a Half Men and Two Broke Girls and whatever the other... Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place, whatever show with the number two in it that you really love, none of those shows have ever been funny. But
some people think they're hilarious.
But some people think they're hilarious because they watch them all the time.
Yeah.
So it's never about...
And you can't explain what makes something funny without, as they say, killing it on the operating table, you know.
So, yeah. I find Melissa McCarthy's
antics
really great.
Me too.
And one of the reasons I think she's so great is because unlike the other comic actors in the world who play on the obnoxious sort of level, mm-hmm. Zach Galifianakis, Will Ferrell, Jim Carrey,
Sandler,
back in the 90s, Adam Sandler, unlike all the guys, she's not an idiot.
True.
Her characters are never stupid.
Yeah.
Her characters are always
ahead of
the curve. They're ahead of the game. They're obnoxious and they're abrasive a lot of the time, but they are really successful and good at what they do. They are never the butt of the joke. They make the joke happen. If someone's going to get taken down in a scene, someone else is going to be the one to go down, and she's going to stand there and go beep beep and run away. That's how that works.
Well, and one of the things that I really liked about this
was... I know I just mixed my metaphors here.
But I know what you
because
mean.
First I called it the Tasmanian devil, and then I called it the Roadrunner. But that's essentially what she's doing.
No, absolutely. And one of the things that I think is so cool about this movie is one of the things we hated about Identity Thief was where they make her cry and they make her be all like, oh, wah, poor me,
she ruins my life. She's pathetic. Wah.
Whereas here... You know, you see Sandra Bullock, you know, whose character is, she's a very competent FBI agent, but she's a terrible people person and, right. and is, you know, sort of very socially awkward and doesn't make friends. You see her kind of meet in the middle. You see how the McCarthy character sort of impresses upon her and makes her loosen up a little and makes her, you know, more of a mensch. I love that the Melissa McCarthy character doesn't really change much at all.
Not at all.
Like she,
not even a little bit.
She doesn't need to be fixed.
Right.
And the movie doesn't try to. It's like, yes.
She has no lessons to learn.
And neither of them really...
Other than becoming nicer to Sandra Bullock.
Exactly. And yeah. neither of them are in any way defined by men. You know, the Bullock character was divorced... Might be getting into a bit of a romance thing with a fellow agent, but it's very underplayed and very much kind of in the background and occasionally pops up. McCarthy, the running gag in the movie is that she keeps running into former, like, one-night stands.
Who are begging for her attention.
Who are crestfallen that she never called again, you know. Yeah. So I love that. This is, you know, she's reuniting with her bridesmaids director, Paul Feig.
Yes.
Who I'm a huge fan of. He created Freaks and Geeks, so... I really enjoy how this is all put together. I think it's a lot of fun.
And this is two hugely successful financial moves for her in 1 year.
Yeah.
So she really is the new Zach Galifianakis in terms
more
of
so,
what she's going to get.
I mean, Galifianakis
done.
Hasn't had a hit outside of the
Hangover.
The Hangover movies.
Well, the political, what was the political movie?
The campaign, or
the
whatever.
Campaign was that was what it called?
Yeah,
that was successful.
Well, okay,
yeah,
but I mean, Identity Thief was the only hit comedy this year so far.
Yes,
everything else, you know, Burt Wonderstone, all these movies tanked. I mean, right. and so it was there was a lot riding on. Okay, if Melissa McCarthy can't make another hit comedy, like we're in big trouble. But
yes.
you know, no, so she did. So yeah, she I'm sure can write her own ticket at this point, which is
good.
Exciting. And I think she is writing something actually for. If not for like for Apatow or for Feig or whatever to do, so
nice. And here's the other thing: this isn't just a fluke for her,
right?
We've seen her do live improv on stage with the Groundlings,
yeah,
and destroy.
Yeah,
and so
when she hosts Saturday Night Live, that gives you more of a look at the kind of stuff she's capable of doing in more of a sketch improv setting, and she's a genius there too.
Yeah, so I really have always just thought she was wonderful all the way back to when she was
Suki
St. James, the fast talking perfectionist chef on Gilmore Girls.
Yes.
I really like The Heat.
Yeah,
it's not. I know critics are sort of divided on it.
It did okay. It's at least fresh, I think. But it's funny, going in, there was the buzz was sort of not great, and people were kind of...
I didn't hear any buzz.
I had been hearing kind of... And then we...
You're more in tune with buzz.
I guess so.
Than I am.
I, you know, my spirit animal tells me.
You pay attention to the
but
buzz.
But we, you know, we howled through that movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Other big release this week in New York and Los Angeles is Pedro Almodovar's new film, I'm So Excited.
Semen.
makes an appearance, yes. It is a very silly movie and a lot of fun. And
with semen.
Yes. Probably the goofiest and dirtiest and gayest movie he has made since Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, if not prior to Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown.
There's a kind of gay dude... that you'll see out in the world. And I don't know where I heard this expression for the first time, but the whole concept of too gay to function. This entire film is not just full of those characters, but sort of is that if this movie were a person,
it would be too gay to function.
It would be a person who is too gay to function. Why don't you explain it in Spanish?
I'm not going to do that. Not your performing monkey.
You should be.
It is set on an airliner that is heading from Madrid to Mexico City.
Say it right.
Madrid.
Thank you.
To Mexico City. And about an hour and a half into the flight, we find that everyone in coach is asleep, including the stewardesses. And because they've all been given muscle relaxants.
Yeah.
And the handful of passengers in business class are starting to wonder why the armrest phones don't work and they can't watch movies.
Right.
Turns out that a pair of incompetent ground crew members, played by Antonio Banderas and Penelope Cruz in a cameo,
explain the pay thing.
Oh, yeah, the little inside joke.
Digression. You had to explain it to me after the movie.
The fake airline in the movie is called Peninsula Airlines, and their little logo that's on the back tail of the plane is just P-E. And when Penelope Cruz comes driving in, she's driving one of those trucks that takes all the luggage to the plane.
Right.
And you see her through the window of the truck, and on the door of the truck it just says P-E. The Spanish tabloid press refers to her as Pe for short. So that's the first time you see her in the movie, she's got Pe.
Little joke. Well, because you laughed out loud
during
the screening when that scene happened. I thought, she's just driving. Calm down, crazy. But no, it was a thing. It was a real... See, this is the thing. I love going to see Spanish movies with you because you know things.
Sometimes things elude the subtitles. I went and saw this movie again last night, and I was noticing definitely, like, if you don't already know the word maricón,
I actually heard them say that in the film.
It doesn't always get translated into the subtitles, but there's a kind of poetry the way Almodóvar uses it.
What was the word that you didn't understand? But the women next to you were also Spanish, and they were...
I think it was mamarracha.
Mamarracha?
M-A-M-A-R-R-A-C-H-A. I think that was the one. I can't remember. Anyway, so because of the ground crew made a mistake, one of the landing gear things won't come down. And so rather than flying to Mexico, they have been circling over Spain for 90 minutes trying to figure out a place to land. So in the meantime, the stewards are basically plying everyone in business class with booze and drugs in the hopes that they'll calm down. And
here's a mamarracha. What does that mean? The definition. I looked it up on the internet. It's all the answers are in Spanish.
Person or thing that is defective, ridiculous, or extravagant.
Okay. Yes. Now it all makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, those passengers are unraveling their own, trying to tie up their own loose ends with people on the ground, using the one working phone in the plane that everyone can hear over the loudspeaker.
Right.
And the flight crew themselves have their own intrigues. One of them has been having a long-going affair with the pilot, who is also married with kids, and the other pilot professes to be straight, but maybe not. Anyway, it's a goofy movie. It is, if you're thinking of Almodóvar as the guy who made Talk to Her and, The Bad Education and The Skin I Live In, this is not that Almodóvar. This is wacky, what have I done to deserve this Almodóvar? Probably the least, even of those early movies, probably the least sort of political or cultural undercurrent to it. I think after making The Skin I Live In, he was in the mood to have some fun, because that movie, super dark and creepy and weird and interesting, but just, I think he wanted to make something wacky and farcical and over the top, and that's what this is. And
full of homosexuality.
Full of homosexuality, yep. And I had a great time.
Semen.
So yeah, if it hasn't gotten to you yet, it will eventually, and you should check it out.
I agree with everything you said.
Okay.
I mean, I had a great time. It's like if the air tasted good, you'd just be sort of chomping at it. and you think, this is good air. And it weighs nothing.
Right, exactly.
And it will never fill me up, but it's tasty.
And I think you have to be a really great filmmaker to make a movie this
inconsequential.
Silly. Yeah, but to make it this well, though, because if it were easy, anybody would do it.
In my review on movies.com, I called it his soul plane.
There you go.
Yeah. Pretty much what it is.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. But, I highly recommend it nonetheless.
All right, so let's, what's the DVDs?
Yes, my pick actually is the 8-disc set Viva Pedro. That is,
of course,
a collection of Almodovar, some of his best films. It is, let me see if I can remember this off the top of my head. Women on the Verge of a Nervous Breakdown, All About My Mother, Talk to Her, The Flower of My Secret, Matador, Live Flesh. Anyway,
Did they send it to you?
No, it's been out for a while. It's not new.
Oh, okay.
It's just tying it in with.
But it exists, and you can.
It exists, and you can get it. It's in print.
Yeah.
What's yours?
Jazz on a Summer's Day, 1959-1960. Documentary shot at the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival in Rhode Island, where they cut back and forth between the Jazz Festival and the America's Cup Trials, and people just hanging out at the Jazz Festival and birds flying around. Bert Stern.
Photographer, mainly it's a photographer.
Photographer, right? Yeah. It's his film. And performances by, you know, all these great people, including Anita O'Day. It ends with Mahalia Jackson singing.
Wow.
It is the perfect movie.
Do you know what other movie incorporates the Newport Jazz Festival?
No.
High Society.
Oh, that's right. So, it is a documentary in that. It is a documentary that may not satisfy jazz purists, because there's so much, you know, cutting away
right
from the performances. But as a capsule of this moment, not just visually when everything looks so great,
right before Mad Men starts.
Imagine how much you remember how much you loved the way the first season of Mad Men looked. You know, it was still really the 50s, so it was all that mid-century. Everything just looked perfect. All the design, all the, you know, the clothes, all that great stuff.
All the bullet bras.
There's all of that. There's this great sort of relaxed sort of feeling about the jazz itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's this very, your body temperature will drop as you watch this film. That's how cool and smooth and rad it is.
And if you have to ask what cool is, it's, man, very peaceful. You'll never know.
Right. It's a really peaceful movie. And one of the things I really appreciated is the idea that, I mean, it's not, this film is not about this, obviously, but it is swimming in that post-war American leisure time thing that people, you know, suddenly, you know, we all had prosperity and jobs and things.
The weekends
and we can hang out and there's, that is really captured here. It's beautiful looking. Every frame of it is gorgeous.
We have weekends where we can go to places in neckties. In the heat.
It looks beautiful. It moves perfectly. The music is amazing. Best of all, if you are not near a place where you can grab a physical copy of it, it is currently streaming in its entirety on Vimeo.
Really?
Yep.
We'll post the link on our Linoleum Knife Facebook page.
Good.
Letters.
Now, there are some letters. You know, it would be great, like on the Flophouse, if one of us could sing a theme to letters.
Oh, you know, Elliot Kalin does that so well.
He does it really good.
I don't think I could even begin to compete in that arena.
I discovered this week that my laptop, even though your nephew has seen fit not to steal.
Yeah, I got to bug them about that.
Get the Microsoft Word to us. There are notes that I can copy and paste things into on my laptop.
Yes, there are.
My fancy new laptop. Here's a letter.
And as soon as I get the right FireWire cables, we can start recording this podcast on my fancy new laptop.
And you just haven't been to the store to get them. Is that
correct?
The situation?
Yeah.
All right, this is from Christopher. His letter is the films he hates.
Okay.
There aren't that many, Well, apparently he likes a lot of movies.
Well.
But here's what he hates.
How nice for him.
It's a list of what he hates.
Okay.
The Thin Red Line. He says, too hard to keep track of who was who. And everybody was thinking very deep thoughts. The kind of thoughts that seemed all wrong for these particular characters. Havana.
Oof, never saw it.
I can't remember anything about it except that I hated watching Robert Redford play cards. Every time the scene faded to black, I thought it was over and then it would come back. I would have been just happy if the entire world faded away around me. I would have been just as happy.
Oh, I see.
If the entire world had faded away around me. Skipped Parts.
No idea.
I haven't seen it. He said, I didn't think Jennifer Jason Leigh was ever in anything bad. Turns out, this is it. I don't know this movie.
I don't. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I've seen her in that was bad. Nothing's leaping to mind, but I'll work on that one.
This movie has two titles.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is Try 17. The other title is All I Want.
Okay.
I don't know what.
Is this like a teen movie that Miramax released or something?
Maybe. Here's what he describes it. I also didn't think Franca Potenza could make a bad movie. Oh, she can.
Oh, I've seen sure, yeah.
Between her, Elijah Wood, Deborah Harry, Elizabeth Perkins, and many others, you'd think something good would have come out of this. I don't know this film at all.
I remember that Elijah Wood and Franca Potenza were going to be in this movie together, and then it never came out, or it didn't come out much, and now I know why.
He saw it.
It stinks.
He wrote, all I wanted was for it to be over.
Yeah, again, it's like the discussion we had a few weeks ago about stars and bars.
Yeah.
Do not be fooled.
When your favorite film star is in a new movie.
Or when a bunch of film actors that you like are all in the same
movie.
They're
all together. Something good has to come of this.
Exactly. How bad could it be with this cast?
Or they could all drown in the same boat.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And especially if you're in the video store and it's a cast of amazing people in a movie you never heard about, there's a reason you never heard about it.
Right. This is from Chris.
Okay.
Dearest Alonzo and Dave.
Yeah, well.
We're
superlative.
We're his dearests.
Yes.
Most of your audience, if not all, get that your setup for these podcasts is lo-fi. I always thought it was part of the authenticity of what you do.
We're keeping it real.
You're not in a studio with an intern whose job it is to mix your audio from the control room. You're in your home with your collection of obscure music intros and a thing historians call a cassette player. So until you begin your show with, this week's episode is brought to you by that truck full of money that showed up to our home, I wouldn't sweat it.
Thank you.
Also,
unlike Dan Savage, we do not have tech-savvy at-risk
youth. We do fret about our audio quite a bit.
Yes, we should just let it go. We did it on this episode.
I know, we did. Here's my top 10.
Okay.
Now, I'm probably not very knife, but I do have a few movies that I would watch over and over again. I make no apologies for my list, but I sometimes wonder what it says about me that I like some of the movies more because my husband does not. Oh, this is Chris in Dallas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. I'm stupid.
You need to tell me these things. I officiated at their wedding.
I made us watch 2010, the year we make contact, despite the constant commentary on Roy Scheider's leather brown skin.
He's pretty Naga-hide in that movie.
Yeah. Young Frankenstein.
Great.
Crimes of the Heart.
Oh, I love that movie.
2001.
Sure, of course.
Grey Gardens.
Love it.
Here's where it gets sketchy.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Annie. Someone of a certain age.
Yeah. I think if you were a kid when it came out or when it was on cable, you know. John Huston directed this movie.
Anti-Mame.
Oh, yes. Awesome.
And then he writes, but The Trouble with Angels is a fine substitute.
Sure.
The Lion in Winter.
Yeah.
Transformers, the movie from 1986.
Oh, the cartoon.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, you know, that's where you got the touch comes from.
Yeah. Yes, okay. I know. Blade Runner.
Sure.
Dune.
Ooh. He is the Kwisatz Haderach.
Yeah. You know, I have an affection for Dune. It's not good, but...
But it's a not good movie directed by David Lynch.
But it's a not good movie made by David Lynch. So, and Annie I cannot get with.
Yeah, no. Well, I like Carol Burnett in it. That's about it.
Transformers, the movie, is straight up not good, but...
It's better than any of the Michael Bay films.
But it's fun to watch. All the Transformers films, both animated and live action, are entertainment for Dave White.
Well, yes. And only Dave White.
So I'm going to say, was it 85?
Sure.
85% knife is what you are, yes, Chris.
That's a strong passing grade.
Next one's from Lou.
Lou.
I was hoping you would do that. Hey, guys. Discovered you through Alonzo's witty appearances on What the Flick.
Ooh, thank you.
And I very much enjoy your podcast. Oh. Though at times, I want to gag Dave.
Yeah. Well, you listen to Lou and let me talk more.
He says, and not in any sexual way. So he literally wants to put his hands around my neck.
No, that's not that's strangle.
He wants to put a
tube sock in your mouth. A
tube sock in my mouth and make me shut up.
Yes.
But why, Lou?
Because you're getting in the way of my wit.
I quote Craig Robinson from This Is the End. I'm straight up adorable.
Well, that's true.
That's right.
This really is
I got things to say.
This is a two-hander, Lou.
I won't be bossed around by you, Lou.
Leave Lou alone.
You're not my boss, Lou.
Lou's not the problem here. Quit making it about Lou.
Currently, Lou is my problem.
Leave Lou out of this.
Here's Lou's top 10.
Okay.
Crumb.
Great.
The Gleaners and I.
Oh, Lou.
All right, Lou. I know you want to gag me sometimes, but you and me are in love now. Because The Gleaners and I is... Oh. I almost said the F word. That's how much I love The Gleaners and I. It's effing fantastic.
Yeah, if you've not seen The Gleaners and I, see The Gleaners and I. It's amazing.
I'm going to try to curry your favor from now on, Lou. Because
Lou has taste.
Because you've got taste. Some taste. You got some taste. So I guess I take back everything I just said about Lou.
I guess you should. Maybe we should gag you. Go on.
I deserve to be
except
gagged.
That I would now not get to hear the rest of his list, which I really want to hear.
So. Taxi Driver.
Okay.
Lawless Heart. Do we know that one? Is that a movie? I know.
The title rings a bell.
Look that up.
Lawless Heart.
Failsafe.
Oh, fun, yeah.
The Manchurian Candidate.
Oh,
the original, of
love
course.
Love it.
Gods and Monsters.
Great, yes.
Ed Wood.
Love it.
Ghost World.
Great, which also Terry Zwigoff.
Yeah. Yes. And Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
Until Synecdoche, New York, that was my favorite Charlie Kaufman movie.
Yeah.
And people thought I was insane, but I am a big fan of that one. Hang on.
All right.
I want to know what a Lawless Heart is.
It's something Lou likes. It's got to be good.
It's British. Tom Hollander is in it.
Yeah.
A.K.A. Ewan Proclaimer.
Know. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Didn't
you say that to Tom Hollander once?
Yes.
And he looked at you like you were mental,
no,
right?
He didn't. He,
did
he thought it was funny.
He thought it was funny?
He thought it was funny. Right. He was charmed by it.
Okay.
Ewan Proclaimer is sort of our international butter club for this other movie. There was
this other rotten movie.
This terrible British movie called, was it Maybe Baby?
Yeah.
Yeah, awful movie. But the one bright spot is Tom Hollander plays this obnoxious Scottish filmmaker named Ewan Proclaimer.
And he's supposed to be Danny Boyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's hilarious. The movie's awful, but he's a lot of fun. Three intersecting stories about people whose lives are affected by the death of a gay restaurateur. Stars Douglas Henshaw, Tom Hollander, Bill Nighy. And a bunch of people I've never
what
heard
year's
of.
That, what year's
Dominic
that
Hall, 2001.
You would think that I would have seen that for iFilm because I saw everything.
Yeah. This is a gay movie I have never heard of.
Yeah.
Well.
Anyway.
And Lou likes it.
It's got to be good if Lou likes it.
I think we need to check it out.
I guess we should.
On Lou's say so.
Sorry you want to gag me, Lou.
So, giving you the benefit of the doubt on Lawless Heart, I would say that Lou is 100% knife.
You're 100%. You're 105%.
I was going to say, we could go higher Gleaners for Gleaners.
That's like having a better than a 4-point average.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like you turned in a volcano for extra credit.
Is he maybe the first Gleaners and I person to put that on the list? He might be.
I'm always hesitant to say first because there's somebody maybe we forgot, but it does not ring a bell that anybody else ever was that cool.
Yeah, I don't
remember
that anyone else. Yeah. All right. The next letter is super long, so I'm going to save it for next week.
Okay.
Yeah. That means we're done.
Woo! All right, well, we will be here next week, even though it's July 4th, because we care that
well,
much.
Well, no, the 4th is Thursday, so we'll be here next Sunday.
I know, but some people are taking, the whole 7th. Week off or whatever. We are not...
Well, we're part of your holiday entertainment.
by gum.
It's not like we're going anywhere.
Heck no. In the meantime, we thank you for listening, and we advise you to check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmozno, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting, SVU, Podcrash, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program for free at iTunes, and please leave us a review there. Many of you have, and it helps new listeners find the show. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com, and I think you can leave us reviews there, too. So, you know, knock yourself out. That would all be great. Again, you can follow us on Facebook at the Linoleum Knife Podcast page. Twitter, we are at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at getglue.com, and you can write us at linoleumpodcast, all one word, at gmail.com. Let us know your favorite movies, your least favorite movies, your comments on the show, more reasons why Dave should be gagged and how witty I am. And if you went and if you go see The Gleaners and I, because we told you you should go see The Gleaners and I, let us know what you thought.
Yeah, everybody needs to go watch The Gleaners and I.
No question.
No matter where you can find it.
Yeah.
It probably can be a little hard to find.
I don't know. I think it might be streaming.
Maybe.
But I'll look for it, and if I'll post any links I can find on the Linoleum Knife Facebook page. And tell your friends to like us on Facebook, because we're still battling it out with
that podcast. We're still having a fight with the Dave other podcast that I hate.
And we will not be.
And I will never name.
We will not be outfriended.
I will also not name it if you come to me privately and ask for the name. You've not been doing that.
No, we're not telling.
People have been doing that. I'm like, I'm not telling you what it is.
It's a secret. The thing I keep forgetting to mention on the program, and I don't know if we want to do this now or later.
What?
Do we want to talk about Irv's yet, or do we want to wait until we've set up something for that?
Let's wait until that's official.
Okay.
We don't know what's going on with them still.
Our beloved Irv's Burgers in the neighborhood is facing possible difficulties, and we're still figuring out what those are going to be and when they're going to happen. But
it's not that we love these burgers so much. We love this family.
Yes. So our darling Sonia and her brother Sean and her mother,
Mama Soon
will be forced to relocate, and so we want to help them through that process. And if you guys can help us help them, that would be awesome. But we'll tell you more about that as we get to it. In the meantime, have a great, safe 4th, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.